activists reported that social media companies have been removing their content, stating it violated community guidelines or deeming it hate speech. Reports also included suspended and deactivated accounts and text-only content labeled sensitive, a designation usually reserved for photos and videos containing violence, gore, or derogatory images. The Save Sheikh Jarrah Facebook group was also deactivated, according to Muhammad Al-Kurd. Reports were largely centered on Instagram and Twitter, with some restrictive behaviors conducted by Facebook and even TikTok. Over the weekend, hashtags related to Al-Aqsa Mosque, Sheikh Jarrah, and Al-Quds could not be found on Instagram. According to internal employee communications provided to BuzzFeed, Al-Aqsa, one of the holiest sites in Islam, was flagged by Instagram as associated with violence or dangerous organizations. The label is typically reserved for terrorist groups. During the last days of Ramadan, worshippers at Al-Aqsa were attacked with stun grenades and rubber bullets by the Zionist regime police in riot gear. More than 170 Palestinians were injured. Social media users hoping to publicize the state violence instead found their content removed from search results. 24 rights organizations signed a statement demanding that Facebook and Twitter reinstate affected accounts and explain their actions. The removed content and suspended accounts on both Instagram and Twitter are involved in documenting and reporting what is happening in Sheikh Jarrah, as well as denouncing the Israeli regime's policies of ethnic cleansing, apartheid, and persecution. These violations are not limited to Palestinian users, but also affect activists around the world who are using social media to raise awareness about the grave situation in Sheikh Jarrah. Nadim Nashif, founder and CEO of AMLE, one of the letter's signatories, said the digital rights organization had received approximately 200 cases of social media censorship related to the recent events in Palestine. However, he believes the actual number could be well into the thousands, as many users experiencing censorship may not report it. Actually, 99% of our content removal appeals to social media companies were put back, with no questions asked, and this is clearly because these posts did not really violate their community standards. Nashif told Min Press News, adding, "What's basically happening is the Israeli cyber unit is abusing the system of so-called voluntary takedown." When reached for comment, a Twitter spokesperson said, "Our automated systems took enforcement action on a small number of accounts in error by an automated spam filter. We are expeditiously reversing this action to reinstate access to the affected accounts, some of which have already been reinstated," Twitter said. Facebook, which owns Instagram, responded to requests for comment from Mint Press by issuing a statement that reads in part, "We know there have been several issues that have impacted people's ability to share on our apps, including a technical bug that affected the stories around the world and an error which temporarily restricted content from being viewed on the Al-Aqsa Mosque hashtag page. While both issues have been fixed, they never should have happened in the first place. We're so sorry to everyone who felt they couldn't bring attention to important events or who felt this was a deliberate suppression of their voice. This was never our intention." As previously reported by Mint Press, social media suppression of Palestinian media is not a new phenomenon. AMLE search unveiled significant cooperation between social media behemoth and the Zionist regime in targeting Palestinian content. According to 2020 AMLE report on the systematic erasure of Palestinian content, the Israeli regime Ministry of Justice Cyber Unit is responsible for submitting removal requests to tech companies based on purported violations of domestic law and the company's community guidelines. The Zionist regime minister of justice, Eilat Shaked, stated that Facebook, Google, and YouTube are complying with up to 95% of Israel's request to delete content that the Israeli regime says incites Palestinian violence. This shows a significant focus on Palestinian content and efforts to label Palestinian political speech as incitement to violence. The Zionist regime and non-governmental organizations also encourage citizens to participate in these censorship efforts by making their own content removal request with regard to Palestinian information. The big issue of voluntary takedowns is that there aren't any legal or bureaucratic procedures to clarify them, Nashif said. In 2019, ARALA, the Legal Center for Arab Minority Rights in the Occupied Palestine, and the Association for Civil Rights in Occupied Palestine, ACRI, filed a joint petition to the Zionist Regime High Court of Justice against the cyber unit on the grounds its mechanisms violate the constitutional rights of freedom of expression and due process. Last month, the Zionist Regime Supreme Court rejected that petition. As usual, the Supreme Court supported and validated the actions of the cyber unit, Nashif said. And now they're trying to suppress the Palestinian voice by intensifying these requests for takedowns. Nashif could not confirm that the Zionist regime cyber unit is behind the latest alleged censorship, but through ADALA and ACRI's use of the Freedom of Information Law, AMLA knows the entity made more than 15,000 requests last year to social media platforms. Nashif explained, "We don't have evidence about what's happened in the last week because neither the cyber unit nor Facebook is transparent about the takedowns. But it's clear from following them, researching their policies, speaking with people working in Facebook, and from different appeals in the court against the cyber unit, we know that this is obviously happening. Tensions in Al-Quds and throughout Palestine have intensified in recent days. At a time of writing, the Zionist regime airstrikes have killed at least 87 Gazan Palestinians, including at least 18 children. The Zionist regime forces have fired skunk water and stun grenades at crowds demonstrating against the expulsions of Sheikh Jarrah residents.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM. Thank you.
WRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from WRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of WRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. I'm Atan, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi, two Islamic scholars from the Islamic House of Qom. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome, brother. And Brother Ali, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting me here.
So on different and various occasions, Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, tackled the issue of the conditions of today's world. And in fact, when we are talking about today's world, we are talking about every corner of this world. And we know that this hegemony that is controlling the world in today's world, especially from the part of the superpowers in the Western countries, is now getting into the Eastern part of the world. Their behaviors, their etiquettes of conducts and everything, their politics, economic system and everything is getting over here in the Eastern world and in the Muslim lands too. That's why the Supreme Leader of Iran, I think, has a kind of, we can say, warning and caution for the Muslim generation and the young generation taking care of the hegemonic powers in the world. First of all, Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi, explain a little bit for us, what does the leader mean exactly? I mean, Ayatollah Khamenei, by the hegemonic power and the nature of this power in the world. What does it mean when we say there is a hegemony trying to control the world today?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When we refer to the speeches of the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, we find him describing this power. And when he talks about it, he basically counts a couple of characteristics. The first characteristic is that they all are related to this material world and they think materially.
Okay.
They have no connection with hereafter, or we can say like they do not like even believe in the religion, in any kind of religion. They have their own religion, and they do not believe in the Abrahamic religions as well, in the true sense. Maybe like, you know, they might be called like Christians or maybe Jews or Muslims,
okay,
for example.
That's right.
But they really do not believe in what they are. And there is a specific group, we can say a Zionist group, mm-hmm, amongst all these religions, we can say.
Okay.
Who are trying to basically run this world and to take the control over the world. And their only aim is to have control over the world and to expand their, you know, the territory. The way, you know, we have seen like Alexander, for example, he was invading the countries. He wanted to just expand his territory. Similarly, either they want to have everyone under their control.
That's right.
Or they want to just expand their land.
And do you think that this hegemonic power leader is referring to has roots in the colonialism? We can say we could see that at the time of the, we can say they colonized different countries here and there, the British, the France, even the US, okay? And now this is a new type of power of colonialism. Some scholars like Spivak call it post-colonialism. I mean, the period of attacking the countries and their territories is done now. And now that's the time in order to take the fields like economics, culture, society and something like that. Is this what you are referring to?
It is definitely. You know, when we look at the capitalism, what is capitalism?
Yes, a liberal capitalism.
The liberal capitalism, okay. Secularism, what is it? Mm-hmm. It's all about this, especially, you know, the capitalism is like everything is for America.
That's
for example,
right.
Especially in the Western, in the Eastern country, we see that even if American national, he commits a crime, he's not being like punished in his country, like in that country where he has committed the sin or like maybe killed someone, he has to like the country should send him back to America, for example, U.S.
Okay.
So they will like punish him or like
that's
they
right.
have the judiciary against him, the case against him. So all these things shows us like how they are trying to have the control over, you know, the countries and the
right.
colonization.
Okay, thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsen. Brother Alavian, How do you define the nature of these, we can say, hegemonic powers in the world today?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. I think it's good to start with the point that you mentioned some few minutes ago, that you referred to colonial system, mm-hmm. and you actually compared the new structure of the world political scene in as dominator or domination and domineering.
That's right.
And it was seen exactly what was in the what was in the past centuries, like let's say 16, 17, and onward. We have seen different forms of colonialism, old, new, and post, as you mentioned rightly. Sometimes they directly went to the countries and they tried to actually milk the countries and to take whatever they have in their countries directly.
That's right.
But later on they changed it to send their agents and put their agents in those countries that were colonized by them, mm-hmm. like what they did in India.
The proxies.
Their proxies, exactly. And newly they have changed their format of colonialism. What you are talking about the nature of the domination system, or let's say hegemonic power, which is trying to rule in the whole world, and the scene of the world, actually is from this last type of colonialism, that is post-colonialism. What is the format of it? What is the actually procedure, or what is the operation like in this system? They try to suck all the economy, actually, the economy resources and whatever is in the countries that they call it, let's say, third world countries, or the countries that need to be dominated.
That's right.
And they give them nothing. They claim that they give them, for example, something, and they actually try to put in the minds of those people that we came here to save you. But the reality is something else. They do not give them anything. Whatever they give them, for example, if they give them some tiny privileges,
right.
they are good for nothing. You see,
this is what we could see in the African countries a lot because of their
definitely.
Natural resources. Okay.
So they try to very brilliantly to overcome on the all the resources that countries have.
Mm-hmm.
From different aspects, not only from economy, even from political aspect. They
That's
take.
Right.
They try to hire some politicians, and they actually buy some politicians to do whatever they like to be done in that country. So this is the nature of these countries, let's say, dominating countries.
Who are we referring to exactly? Because now, you know, I think the game has changed.
Yeah.
And they are playing different games. We could see some of the countries in the Eastern world nowadays too, that they are playing by the same rules of the West. Can we consider them as the hegemonic powers or not?
Definitely yes, because what we are talking about, or the countries that we are talking about, it can be, for example, the so-called superpowers that they call
mm-hmm.
themselves superpowers.
Yes.
And we, in our Islamic terminology, we have no superpower
okay.
except God. So these so-called superpowers, which are mostly in the West,
okay.
they are not seen in the... But their traces can be seen in other parts of the world,
That's
in the
right.
North and in the East.
Okay.
So yes, what you said is true. You know, in the past, there were some, for example, they have divided the world between themselves, like in the old format of colonialism. They are defined... They divided the world, for example, this country would be, for example, for the France, the other country would be for... let's say the United Kingdom, and the other country would be for the Spain. But now, each of them, to the extent that they can, they try to suck the resources of the countries. For example, now France, for example, I'm naming the France just as an example.
Okay.
It can be United States as the moment for one country. Takes one part of, let's say, the industry of a country. United States takes the, for example, natural resources of that same country. And, for example, another country comes to take something else. But instead, they give nothing. It would be astonishing if you hear that, for example, in the current century that
yes.
we are living, in the years that we are living
yes.
In our today's life,
mm-hmm.
the contract that they are actually writing with the workers of those countries,
That's
they
right.
give the mother country less than 3%
yeah.
of the right of that country.
Recently, we passed the International Day of Laborers and Labor Day, and the unfortunate news is that these laborers and laborers all around the world are getting paid lower and lower every day, and the pockets of the rich men around the world.
This is one aspect, bro. Okay. Look, paying the laborers their due is something. But what I'm talking about, I think I was not able to actually transmit the message, right? Let me tell you.
Okay.
Look, suppose that this is the next country and it has been colonized in the new format by, for example, an A country.
Okay.
So the X country naturally needs to take some profit from the country that is coming to take out their resources.
That's all right.
But this mother country, this X country, receives nothing instead.
Yes. But I think that Brother Ali and Said Mohsen, it's more than that in today's world. I think such kind of etiquettes and conducts and the behaviors of the superpowers, we can say like a disease are spread now in the world. We could see in the Eastern countries too, even in the Eastern Bloc of the European countries nowadays, that they are trying also to exploit, you know, the other countries around themselves through the contracts, or we can say exploiting the resources or something like that. Why Sayyid Mohsen so much fond of being materialistic and being interested in this mundane world? I mean, is this the new lifestyle for today's world? You have to live in a materialistic way, so you have to be alive?
Well, this is not something new, obviously, in the Quran, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, Inni ja'ilun fil ardi khalifa, that I will send a khalifa on the earth, a representative on the earth. The first thing, the first objection which angels had at that time was that, are you going to send someone who shed the blood and does the corruption? So this is something which is inside human beings, because we are made of clay. And we have some part of, this material world in ourselves. Yes, we have
soul. But it doesn't mean that we have to be inclined,
yeah,
is it?
That's it. We have a soul and the body.
So okay. Satan is from fire, so it doesn't have any inclination toward, I don't know, materialistic world?
It has.
He is a source of materialistic desire.
It has.
Okay.
But the main point is, like, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when he created us, there is a reason of creating us.
Uh-huh.
And when he gave us the ruh, or the soul, where he says, وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِي, I have blown my ruh into him, it refers to the divinity and the perfection. Whereas the body that we have, it's a tool for this soul in order to worship Allah, in order to be a good person, and in order to be the way the soul should be. But unfortunately, those people who are like think materially, they forget about their origin.
That's right.
They forget about the soul, that there is also a soul. Today, the world is after a peace. They cannot find peace.
Yes.
They find maybe peace in yoga. They might be find peace maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
They maybe find peace in the music, for example.
Yeah.
But still, they are not finding any peace.
They are not.
They're not.
Peace inside is not possible for today.
The inside peace is when the soul itself feels peace.
Mm-hmm. Because they do not believe in soul, brother.
There are some people like
that. No, I mean this system.
That's why we see
about.
The Abrahamic religion, those who are truly following the Abrahamic religion, and they're related to some kind of like divine material, like you can say like text or anything of worshipping.
The scriptures.
They somehow feel they have that kind of peace in them. Especially Muslims definitely have, because, you know, the Nights of Qadr and the things that we have, all these things shows us that these people have peace. Even when they have less, we can say, like, sustenance, they at that time also thanks Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They
That's
say thanks.
Right.
Whereas in the material world, we see that the people, when they do not have, they complain all the time. Or if they think materially, if they think that this material world is the final destination, you know, this phrase which is like, this is the... you only have one life, and just enjoy this life.
Yeah,
this is the dangerous, we can say, like statement.
Carpe diem theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this shows us that the people who are like thinking materially, who want to expand, they have ignored number one.
That's right.
Number two, they have hubb ad-dunya.
Yes.
The love of this world.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, if they got some power, now this is another issue. You know, sometimes when we get some power, we think like this is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to, like, we do not want to lose that thing.
That's right.
So if America, for example, became the superpower because of the energy or the atomic bomb or the army or whatever the reason is, because of economics, instead of being proud of that and oppressing other countries, if it was about to help other countries to develop, it was much more like, you know, better for the America itself, U.S. and the whole world, because when you're working for the whole world, that is, you need to obviously take everyone with yourself.
And do you think that in today's world, in the 21st century, one country can rule the others?
No, it's not possible.
It's not like
it's
the past.
It's not possible anymore.
Okay,
it's not possible anymore because, you know, especially with the United Nations, especially after the World War, when the United Nations was
established,
that was on the same basis, that there shouldn't be any more invasion or invading countries.
Yes.
And still, that's why, you know, in the United Nations, we have the issue of Palestine and Israel.
Yes.
The Zionist regime who has occupied the Palestine, similarly, the issue of Kashmir, that India has occupied the Kashmir. All these issues, why they
that's
are? Because in the United Nations,
but
it was decided.
I think still the superpowers have their own lobbies in the United Nations.
Well, the point is they have veto. They have 61% of the vote.
Yeah,
that's the main issue, because they can veto the
votes.
The votes.
That's right.
And that is the main issue. If that veto is not there, then obviously they do not have any power anymore.
Okay, thank you very much, Brother Ali Alevian and Said Mohsen Naqvi, for presence in the program Viewpoints. I'm Atan, the host of this program, and thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. For more information on this program, other programs, visit our website, parstraight.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel, Call of Islam Radio. You can also refer to our Instagram page under Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanullah.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and let us contemplate on what the Prophet of Islam has said about the kinds of hands that human beings have. Hands are of three types: the begging hand, the giving hand, and the grasping hand. The best of hands is the giving hand.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
May 2017, Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, extended a warm welcome to the visiting U.S. President of the time, Donald Trump, with flags and posters symbolizing solidarity between Saudi Arabia and the United States against global challenges. Still in Riyadh, Trump clinched military deals with Saudi Arabia worth about $110 billion. He then delivered a speech to a dozen of Arab leaders on peace and confronting extremism. Basked in Saudi Arabia's lavish royal welcome, Trump was looking for a new scheme both to satisfy Iran hawks at home and at the same time to milk the Saudis and their Arab allies altogether. In early May, a Lebanese newspaper published top-secret documents about the failed Arab-NATO project with the aim of forging a larger regional coalition against Iran.
The idea of an Arab-NATO, really it's not an Arab-NATO, it's not an Arab coalition, it's the Persian Gulf monarchies, the least democratic of all of the Arab regimes, basically. Virtually all, the ambition is for virtually all the Persian Gulf Arab monarchies to be involved there. In other words, regimes that are already aligned with the US very strongly, some of which have very important naval and air bases, Bahrain and Qatar, for example, into that sort of coalition. So it really parallels with the process Trump began and Biden is continuing quite smoothly of normalization, of trying to incorporate Israel into open relationships with the Arab regimes with which it has been cooperating secretly for the last one or two decades.
According to Beirut-based Al Akhbar newspaper, the documents show that Trump began to lure its allies in West Asia into building an anti-Iran front after his first foreign trip to Riyadh as the President of the United States. Dubbed the Middle East Strategic Alliance, MESA, and the Arab NATO, Trump's plan was welcomed with great enthusiasm from the Saudis, who tried to encourage other Arab leaders to join them. According to a confidential Saudi document dated July 4, 2019, the Americans demanded that all parties must accelerate arms deals with the United States. It was just around this time Trump famously announced that the Arabs needed to pay for Washington's support. In fact, Trump's plan to form the so-called Arab NATO sought to alleviate the burden of the security challenge on America and milk local nations by forcing them to purchase large quantities of U.S.-made military equipment.
The overall objective of the U.S. in this region, and the Israelis have some different emphasis on it, but by and large they're a colony of the U.S., and similarly the Saudis. So the overall objective at this stage is divide and rule. They know that the attempts to have a subservient regimes in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, let alone Iran, that's all failed. So the plan B, the best they can do is try and keep those states weak, divided, and being undermined by terrorism and other types of intervention there. So divide and rule is the key here. Now, if they could get a bloc, an Arab regime bloc that was pro-Israel as large as possible, that's what they'd like.
According to Al Akhbar, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain insisted on the necessity of confronting Iran and its regional wings as the main focus of the alliance, a telltale sign that the Arab trio were skeptical about the intentions of Washington for what they called the Arab NATO. They were concerned about the lack of commitment on the American side, and the fact that the alliance did not offer any benefits to the member states. According to the minutes of a coordination meeting, the head of the Saudi delegation expressed his concern this way. We want the coalition to be limited to the military security aspect only, and to include sources of threats in addition to the possibility of establishing strategic partnerships with other allied countries. In fact, the Arabs became increasingly disillusioned with the scheme, as the United States kept refusing to make serious commitments. In a separate document minuting a meeting in Washington, D.C. of representatives from the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council, Jordan and the United States on the 18th of September 2019, U.S. officials confirmed that America would not be obliged to take any military action in the event of attack against MESA member states, except to provide security consultations. Talks about the new alliance came just after Trump withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal, something that had both thrilled and threatened the Arabs. According to the documents Al-Akhbar has access to, the head of the Bahrain delegation urged, "We want to obtain guarantees that the United States will not abandon this alliance, as it did by withdrawing from the nuclear agreement with Iran." The UAE similarly complained that Washington provided no categorically reassuring guarantees, with the financial burdens resulting from this alliance to be placed largely on Middle Eastern members. The Saudi counterproposal outlined in the document from the 4th of July 2019 envisaged a military security alliance only without the political, economic, and energy riders tacked on by the U.S. side.
You could say that it's failed because it's only a partial normalization process, which has two states in the region and two more in Africa recognizing Israel openly and therefore breaking from the Arab coalition against Zionism. It's failed to that extent, but it seems it's still in process. That is to say, Israel is pressuring Washington to maintain the Trump approach of open confrontation with Iran and also to try and have open relationships with more of the Persian Gulf monarchies. Whether it was ever going to be anything like NATO in the sense that there were some sort of security guarantees for those petro-monarchies themselves is another story.
The minutes also revealed disagreements between Persian Gulf states led by Saudi Arabia and others. For example, Kuwait expressed skepticism for the Saudi-led security-focused initiative, or Egypt expressed a desire to focus on the political side and said that Cairo saw the MESA concept as one of an advisory nature. That's why Oman reportedly rejected Riyadh's military-focused position, saying that Muscat would support the economic rather than the military aspect of the proposal.
The Saudis at different times have been very keen to build some sort of alliance there to confront the rising influence of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the region. Now, things are changing somewhat because the Saudis have moved to normalize with Syria. They are trying to seek some sort of ceasefire with Yemen. They are even talking to Iran.
The Arab NATO project went partly beyond the multi-billion-dollar arms deals, indicating the significance of Iran in regional equations. Even when the diplomatic ties between Iran and the Arab world were at their historic low, the Saudi camp, along with the United States, couldn't build up a unified front against Tehran. Now, Trump is gone, as is his Arab NATO scheme. And Riyadh is reaching out to Tehran once again, hoping to have good relations with its neighboring country.
Thank you. today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters in faith and humanity, Salamun alaikum, and so welcome to this episode of today's special. We're going to speak about haste in Islam. Be with IRIB English Radio. Today's Sunday is the 4th of Shawwal 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 26th of Ordibehesht 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 16th of May 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We bless this moment of today's special by recitation of Chapter Taha, verse 114.
فتعالى الله الملك الحق ولا تعجل بالقرآن من قبل أن يقضى إليك وحيه وقل رب زدني علما.
So high above all is Allah, the Sovereign, the Truth. And O Muhammad, do not hasten with recitation of the Quran before its revelation is completed to you. And say, My Lord, increase me in knowledge.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Dear friend, opportunities must be utilized, but haste is used for the circumstance where the time of action has not come yet, or the matter needs to be searched and we do not observe it, then we have made haste. The origin of haste is sometimes the negative qualities such as impatience, pride, and vanity. These qualities, of course, are blameworthy and are aloof from the holy being of the Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny.
Some might say this world today shows God's left us to our mistakes, oh. He has never been so far away, some might say. How could any father stand, see his children across mayhems, suffer so, give no helping hand, no helping hand. And somewhere tonight, far away and out of sight, there's a child that's too weak to cry. And deep in those eyes, can't you see him in disguise, reaching out to the heart that's in you? And
now, today's special and warning against haste. Haste may lead to recklessness and failure to put things in their right place. As a consequence, in their haste, people may do wrong to themselves, their community, and their nation. Those who are habitually hasty are easily overwhelmed by doubts and suspicions, and are always obsessed by pursuing others' flaws and finding faults with them. To haste victory without having its means is a sign of ignorance of the ways of Allah in His universe. Allah, the Almighty, says, "Or think you that you will enter paradise without such trail as came to those who passed away before you? They were afflicted with severe poverty and ailments and were so shaken that even the messenger and those who believe along with him said, 'When will come the help of Allah?' Yes, certainly the help of Allah is near." Chapter Al-Baqarah, verse 214. Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin as-Sain. In this episode, we are going to talk about making haste as viewed from the perspective of Islamic instructions. At the same time, we find that sabr or patience has got so many meanings and senses in the Islamic instructions. So one of them is, for example, being patient in not answering positively to Satan for being tempted by him. It is, giving a strong negative answer to Satanic temptations. Another sense of sabr or patience is being willing to receive the divine favor at the proper time that it will come to us. And another one is being not that in haste to do everything ahead of its time. We find that sometimes throughout the Holy Quran, we find that in the cases of the Quranic accounts of the life sometimes of the divine prophets as well as other personalities to whom references are made in the Holy Quran, we find that in this connection, those people who have been successful, they are those people who have been patient enough in order to wait for the divine respite and the divine compensation.
One life, one hope, one heart, one soul, one chance to know, one time to go.
Just one call from my heart pulls me to a world apart. There's just one word that I hear, one trumpet calls me near when the spring has been unwound. What is lost will soon be.
In the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam, making haste before having the ability causes stress. The fruit of haste is error. The other quote is, being hasty before possessing the ability is part of foolishness. And the last but not the least, one who is hasty regrets his haste.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every bar.
Today's a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the.
You are with today's special from IRIB English Radio. Look before you leap. Stop, drop, and roll. Stop yourself by setting a deadline for making decisions. Drop your immediate perceptions by investigating and researching all of the facts. Roll out your decision as a tentative decision to a few colleagues you trust to test the concept and watch for gut reactions. Ask why 5 times. Ask why you think the situation or problem is occurring, then ask why you think that is happening, then ask it again. By the time you have drilled down 5 times on what you thought the original conclusion was, you will have explored other facts that might lead you to a different decision on how to move forward.
What is, you know, from an Islamic perspective, what does the Islamic perspective have to say about the development of a thought into a decision, right? So in the Quran we read, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, wa imma yanzaghannaka min ash-shaytani nazghun fasta'id billah innahu sami'un 'alim, that there are people who the shaytan suggests something to them. And some people feel guilty because of the thoughts that they have. You know, they might have evil thoughts or sinister thoughts or inappropriate thoughts. And God is not going to punish you for the thoughts that you have, because the shaitan is a professional at suggesting. The way that the shaitan works is that he doesn't need to hold your hand throughout the entire process of disobedience. All he needs to do is suggest. So the Quran says, وَإِمَّا يَنْزَغَنَّكَ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ نَزْغٌ. If the shaitan suggests something to you, turn to God, turn to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That represents that space between the stimulus and the response. So when we talk about thoughts, the first stage is what is called al-hajis. What does that refer to? Al-hajis is a fleeting thought that is quick to enter into the consciousness and quick to exit. If you think about how many of those fleeting thoughts you have on a daily basis. Now, I looked into it, I did a little bit of a search, and I don't know how accurate it is, but I came across this fact. It says that the average person, the amount of fleeting thoughts that come to us on a daily basis are at about 6,000. 6,000 fleeting thoughts a day. And if you think about it, these are the ones that you know, they quickly enter the consciousness and they exit. You know, it could be sometimes those thoughts that enter your consciousness when you first wake up, right? Or when you're falling asleep, if you've ever experienced that. Right before you fall asleep, sometimes you get, you know, the most invasive, fleeting thought. And it's really far from reality. You know, you may be sitting in a very safe space, in a very protected space, but for a split second, you may feel like you're in danger. That's a fleeting thought that arrives and then it departs. So that's called al-hajis. So we have about 6,000 of those per day. The second level is called al-khatir, or if you've heard the plural of this is khawatir. So this is defined as thoughts that enter into the mind and the individual chooses to think about. So it's not just something that shows up and leaves. It's something that shows up and you choose to think about it, right? And, you know, in common terms, this is referred to as, if it's a negative thought, it's referred to as rumination. What is rumination? It's a deep or considered thought about something.
That's a good topic for discussion, so we continue on the next episode of today's special, inshallah. Till then, fi amanallah. بسم الله لنا فتح ذكر الله لنا حسن لطف الله لا
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.